Okay.
The Senate Judiciary Committee will come to order. Let the record reflect that we do have a quorum. Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, I have Senate File 851. And there's an A1 amendment, please. That's cleanup language that Mr. Back has caught. So I'd offer the A1 amendment.
And the author's A1 amendment is an author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed say nay. Motion is adopted. Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, this is a provision that was in the governor's budget bill. And because it was a policy discussion, we carved it out and put it in a new bill and then sent it to this committee. And in your packets, you should have the relevant page of the budget book. And in the middle of that page, it says sex offender assessment. And that tells us what this bill does. Minnesota Statute 609.3457 requires that assessments on certain sex offenders. And this proposal will allow the list of sex offenses requiring assessment to be expanded. It would expand things for, in subdivision 4, the following offenses are proposed for addition. 609.3455, dangerous sex offenders, life sentences, conditional release. 609.322, soliciting a minor to engage in prostitution. 609.324, other prostitution crimes involving a minor. 609.352, soliciting a minor to engage in sexual conduct. 617.246, use of a minor in sexual performance. 617.247, possession of pornographic work, including minors, involving minors. 609.294, bestiality. 609.3453, criminal sexual predatory conduct. And 609.365, incest. The budget book goes on to say it is essential that assessments be done on offenders convicted of these crimes. So the department's risk assessment community notification unit has enough information to assign the appropriate risk level. The cost is about $75,000 a year. And I have Ken Mers with me from the department who can answer anybody's questions because I've just told you all I know about it.
Any questions for the witness members? And Senator Higgins, there is cost implications.
So it goes back to our division.
So it comes back to your division?
Well, technically it goes to finance. But.
And what it basically does is we're just adding more categories of crimes to the sex offender assessment.
Yes.
Basically. Any questions for Senator Higgins or the witness members? Senator Betzel.
Chair, just a quick question, Senator Higgins. I'm looking at the handle material. We have a 609-746. Interference with privacy, is this one of those that's being amended, or was this something that was just given to us erroneously? I'm trying to...
Senator Betzel, I think Ms. Backus has an answer for you.
Madam Chair and Senator Betzel, I believe you're referring to... If you're referring to 609.746, that's current law.
Okay.
Yeah, that's...
Oh, that's... Okay. Well, we have a copy in our packet, and I didn't see whether that was... Okay. Oh, I see. It's current law. Never mind. Okay.
Any other questions for Senator Higgins or the witness? See none. Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, I have a question relating between the costs for the assessment between the state and the county, but I'm not sure if that would be appropriate for this committee.
Certainly, yes. Senator Olson, if you want to ask the question, we'll get an answer for you.
Okay. Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, if you know, do you know how the costs for these assessments are broken down between the state and the counties, and do you know whether this changes what the impact will be on the need for additional county expenditures?
Mr. Mers does.
Welcome to the committee. Please restate your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ken Mers. I'm the Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Corrections. Currently, what this does is the county is responsible for the payment of these assessments. Then they can apply to the department for reimbursement up to $600 per assessment. The amount of funding that is being requested in the governor's budget was based on the number of offenders who had been sentenced for these particular additional crimes, I believe it was in 2005, and then that number times the 600, and we anticipate there being a few more, so there is a little bit of extra in there, but that's how they came up with the additional funding in the governor's budget.
Senator Olson, is that satisfactory to you?
Madam Chair, well, another issue, and I'm not sure if I'm talking about the same thing, but it came to my attention. I'm not sure if it's with these assessments or with something else where there's a provision for the county to apply for reimbursement, but that the funding isn't really there in a pool to actually pay the assessment or to reimburse the counties. Do you know if the funds are actually appropriated by the state and if the counties are, in fact, being reimbursed for these assessments?
Madam Chair and Senator, yes, they are. I think what you might be referring to, we were contacted by Hennepin County. Originally, when they looked at it, there were two subdivisions which was the amendment that you adopted earlier, that without those, there would have been many more assessments being ordered, and there probably would not have been sufficient funding. But with the adoption of the amendment and restricting them to subdivision one of the two different offenses, that then limits the number, and that's what the reimbursement, the additional funding, was based on.
Okay. Very good. Any further questions for Senator Higgins or the witness? Seeing none. Senator Higgins, what is your wish?
Madam Chair, I move that Senate File 650 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance, as amended.
851, Senator Higgins? Senate File 851?
Yeah. What did I say?
650.
Okay.
Senate File 851 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those favor say aye.
Aye. Okay.
All those opposed say nay. Motion passes. Senator Higgins? Senate File 1340.
Yes, Madam Chair. That's my other bill today. And I have with me Commissioner Penny Steele from Hennepin County. Here somewhere. Here we go. And then Kevin Kyer or somebody from the Public Defender's Office is here as well. And Madam Chair, my original bill, are you going to talk about the original bill or the amendment?
Whatever you want.
Okay. Commissioner Steele is going to lay out the problem that Hennepin County has the allocation and distribution of funds for public defenders. And then when she's done and Mr. Kyer has an opportunity to respond, I have an A1 amendment but I'll wait until after they're done talking, please.
Senator Higgins, in the interest of time, you don't want us to consider your amendment as part of the bill, or is that an
Oh, yeah, I do want it to be considered as part of the bill, so I guess we probably can just put it on now.
Can we just put it on so that we're speaking to the bill as is? Thank you.
Back. Madam Chair, I'll move the A1 amendment.
Yeah. On the A1 amendment, the author's amendment to put the bill in the shape she desires it to be in, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion passes. Now, Senator Higgins, on the bill.
Commissioner Steele, please.
Commissioner Steele, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
I'm Penny Steele, Hennepin County Commissioner. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Please proceed.
I don't know how many people know the long and sordid history of Hennepin County and public defense, but we have a long, sort of an interesting past with the state takeover of public defense. Part one, and Hennepin and Ramsey County were not part of that takeover. And then several years ago, I think my entire board has had some part in trying to work through this problem for Hennepin County. And so there was another agreement reached, and Mr. Castro's here from Hennepin County Public Defender, too. The green sheet I'm handing out sort of gives you a history of some of the things that we've done, but we're the only county, and I'll just go through. At the time the legislature approved the state takeover of public defense, the state and the county were to reach an agreement on the details of the takeover. No agreement was ever reached, and Hennepin is the only county in Minnesota to allocate property tax dollars to public defense. State Board of Public Defense, we felt that we just have not ever gotten the adequate amount of funding. Hennepin's the only county required to pay its own Westlaw subscription. Hennepin's required to pay operating expenses for all employees, both state and county, computers, software, printers, supplies. The state's contribution to Hennepin's expenses were frozen for the last 4 years, while the county contribution increased 11%. The number and complexity of the cases in the 4th Judicial District, as you all can imagine, are probably the most complex cases in the state, require adequate resources. Judicial initiatives and calendaring require unique staffing, and the system can grind to a halt, increasing costs for the state courts and the county sheriff, county attorney, if one partner of the system is lacking in resources. So Hennepin is unique and kind of complex, and we've had an ever-increasing, when we sort of came to an agreement quite a few years ago, we all thought as the state employees replace county employees that we'd sort of see our property tax dollars go down, and as you can see by the green sheet, they're creeping back up, and it's sort of like the line might eventually get us there, but it does seem to be a pretty tough road as we get along the way. So the senator's amendment probably is a great way to really get at the heart of the matter and figure out sort of how we figure this out. And, there's lots of discussions from all sides, but as we continue to have county employees, they still get the county increases, and there's just a complex system. So I'm here to just help sort of lay out some of the problem, and there are people with me that can certainly help with the particular questions you might have.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Kier.
Madam Chair and members, for the record, my name is Kevin Kier. I'm the Chief Administrator with the Board of Public Defense. And Commissioner Steele is correct. We have a kind of a long history here, a lot of it due to some financial difficulties that you all have experienced over the number of years. I look around the room, I think that Commissioner Steele and I are probably the only two that were around when that original deal was put together that many years ago. So I think this is a good start to at least educate everybody, because I don't think you want to take the time here today, and frankly, I don't think you could take the time here today to have all the explanation of everything. So I'll just leave it at that.
Senator Higgins, the allocation of the funds on the weighted caseload, is there, in your amendment, is there a sunset to that while we're getting the study and the report requirement to come back?
Madam Chair, the original bill would have changed the allocation to be based on the judicial district weighted caseload, and since this is a delete-all amendment, nothing would change until after the study.
Let's come back.
And part of the study would be a recommendation on how we could go about doing this.
So, members, just to be clear, we are now only looking at the study and the report back requirement. We are no longer making any changes in the allocation.
And, Madam Chair?
Senator Higgins.
Could I please amend 1.10 the words? I'd like to delete the words support contributed and change that to funding provided, please.
Senator Higgins moves that on line 1.10, delete support contributed and insert funding provided. Any further discussions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say nay. Motion is adopted. Senator Foley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't see anything in this, Senator Higgins, that tells who's going to pay for this. And I assure you that my division doesn't have any money after the hearing we had this morning. So.
Mr. Kier, are you going to be okay with doing this study without specific appropriations?
Madam Chair, we can do that.
Very good. Thank you very much. Any further discussions? Are there, I'm sorry, is there anybody in the audience who would like to testify on this bill? See none. Any further discussions from the members? See none. Senator Higgins, move that Senate File 1340 be recommended to pass and be referred to the floor. Senator Higgins?
As amended.
as amended?
I suppose it can, can't it?
Yes,
we don't
can.
Have any money to deal with.
Yes.
Yes, please.
Senator Higgins' motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion passes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I did well to get you all out of here.
Thank you.
Senator, where's Senator Romo? She's coming. I'm wondering if we can do Senator. We'll recess and wait till she comes back.
There's a lot of Linda.
He's going to move. So he doesn't have a district. He's got a house in my district.
But this feel also never leave the room when your bill is next. That's the point.
We wanted to get you guys. No, no, she's across the street. I mean, across the hall.
Are you angry at women?
Thank you for letting me go first.
Senator, can I talk to you for a sec before you go?
Sort of gets that way with him. Sure. You know, I would guess he wouldn't do that to you.
Senator Romo, please take the seat. We're sorry that we had to shift the schedule around a little bit.
Madam Chair, that's quite all right. I've decided that in this business we need to clone ourselves. We can be in two places at once.
That's right. Well, welcome to the committee. You're going to present to us Senate File 1053.
That's right, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. Senate File 1053 is technically a non-controversial bill that makes two technical corrections. And I have with me Mr. Chris
Crutchfield,
excuse me for catching my breath here, and Senator L. Carlson, who can walk you through the reason why these corrections need to be made. And at this point, I'll just turn the mic over to Mr. Crutchfield.
Mr. Crutchfield, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Senators. We're here to speak on Senate File 1053, which proposes two changes in Minnesota Statutes 383A. And 383A is the statute that deals with the workings of Ramsey County, and specifically Ramsey County Corrections. And I do government relations for Ramsey County Corrections, and with me is Al Carlson, who is the superintendent of the Ramsey County Correctional Facility, also known as the Workhouse. 1053 is simply attempting to bring our statute, 383A, into harmony with current law and what's being done in other counties around the state. The first change is in sub 6, which deals with good time. And the sub 6 as written hasn't been changed since 1974, when good time was calculated one day for every 5 days served. And that was in our statute. What's happened is in 1991, the rest of the state, the legislature changed the good time calculation to one day of good time for every 3 days served, but they forgot to change it in our statute. And what we're asking is that we just delete that part out of our statute and point it towards 643.29, which is what the Minnesota statute is that everyone else follows. Second piece is changing sub 7, which deals with the confinement of inmates from other counties. In other words, people who have done a crime, who've committed a crime in another county, but wish to serve their crime in Ramsey County. Wish to serve their time in Ramsey
Same
County.
Same difference, Mr. Crutchfield.
I'm sorry, I'm a little nervous today for some reason. Anyway, if you want to serve your time in Ramsey County and you've committed a crime in another county, you can do that, provided, number one, we have the space, and number two, that you're willing to pay for it out of your own pocket. Our statute 383A provides that you have to actually pay the actual per day cost or per night cost in order to do that. And what we're asking for is, in times of low occupancy, when we have bed space, we want to be able to negotiate that price down a little bit because our fixed costs are already there. It would also allow someone who's from Ramsey County who maybe committed a crime in Bemidji or somewhere out in greater Minnesota to be able to stay close to their family or to keep their job or to stay with a chemical dependency program or other transition program. This is the ability to negotiate a lower rate is something that all other counties have, and we're just asking to be in line with the rest of the counties. And that, Senators, is really the bill.
Madam Chair, would the superintendent like to make some remarks?
Actually, I think Chris pretty well covered it. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you. Any questions? This, I mean, basically is a cross-reference and technical, and I would think that this is probably even a candidate for the consent calendar, unless the members are opposed to that. Very good. Then, Senator Ortman, would you move the bill?
I do, Madam Chair.
Senator Ortman moves that Senate File 1053 be recommended to pass and be placed on the consent calendar. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion passes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Congratulations, Senator Rummel. Members, there is a very important bill that's on our calendar for today. All the testifiers are here, but Senator Berglund is in a committee. And I think that for purposes of the testifiers who are here today, we're going to try to see if we can accommodate Senator Berglund, but we may have to recess until she's finished with her other meetings. So why don't we let's see, what time is it now?
3:30.
Why don't we recess until 4 o'clock? And we'll check back in here, and in the meantime, I'll check them to see where they are in that meeting. And perhaps if they're nearing the end of the meeting, Senator Berglund can come get us started. We'll hear from the testifiers, and then she can come back. We'll find a way to do this. So we will recess until 4 o'clock.
Proceed.
The Senate Judiciary Committee is coming back to order. Senator Berglund on Senate File 1179.
Of the committee, Senate File 1179 was brought to me by constituents in my district, and it deals with the issue of bus stops for children, school bus stops where children are picked up for school, and the problem of not having those be drug-free zones. People would like to see those also be drug-free zones because this might be hard to believe. I can believe that time understanding this, but from about 5:30 in the morning on, there is people driving up and down our streets trying to solicit for prostitution and trying to sell drugs to traffic that's headed to work. And I realize that it's hard to believe it, but you can come out to Wilmington Avenue, my district, and see it anytime, between 5:30 and 7:30 in the morning. And that's the time that the kids are trying to catch the bus to go to school. And so there's a lot of things going on at these bus stops that really are not very appropriate to have happening between school children. And they have no choice but to be at that bus stop. It isn't like they can say, oh, this is terrible, I'm going to go back home. They have to wait for that bus to come and pick them up. So that's what the bill is about. It is increasing the penalties by making school bus stops a drug-free zone. And I'll let them tell you, they can tell you much more eloquently than I can about the terrible things that happen to the children in our communities because they are in the middle of all of this other illegal activity that's going on.
Very good. Thank you. And we'll see you later.
Let me know.
It will be, and I think what we'll do is we'll probably take you first thing Thursday,
okay.
If that's okay with you.
Sure.
We'll do that. Thank you, Senator Berglund. Mr. Peter Molinar from Powderhorn Community.
Madam
Welcome
Chair.
To the committee. Please restate your name for the record.
I'm Peter Molinar. I have worked for nearly three decades in an iron foundry
actually in the Phillips community of South Minneapolis. And I am here to testify on behalf of Minnesota Acorn. I will, for the most part, read from a prepared statement. Drug and prostitution-free zones offer communities a means by which to enforce strong penalties against individuals who are seeking to exploit our children. These zones, however, do more than just provide for stronger punishment. The California Department of Justice, for example, sees drug-free zones as a great way of reducing drug dealing in certain areas because they help to create a partnership between local communities and law enforcement agencies. Helping to build trust between the police and the community can go a long way towards reducing crime. But more than this, we can all agree that children are influenced by their surrounding environment. What kind of message are we sending if we are enforcing drug-free zone laws only at schools but not in other public areas where children are commonly found? We might itemize for ourselves what those areas might be. Acorn members often complain that is targeted at children waiting about the drug dealing that is targeted at children waiting at public bus stops. It seems that if we truly want to create and maintain a supportive and clean environment in which our children can grow, then we must work extra hard to protect those areas where they live, work, and play. This is why prostitution-free zones must be expanded. In my view, in essence, we are asking for more signage, more points of stimulus with an anti-drug, anti-crime message for the benefit of our children.
Thank you, Mr. Molinar. Senator Scheid.
Madam Chair, I don't have the bill. I guess you may not give it to us yet until we're dealing
with it. Oh, no, you should have the bill.
I don't think I do.
Can we make sure members have the bill?
I have a question. I understand drug-free zones. Do we currently have prostitution-free zones?
Senator Scheid, we do. Uh-huh. And what I was going to do is have the witnesses give their testimonies so we have it on the record, and then they could leave if they need to. And then I was going to have Mr. Backus walk us through the mechanics of the bill just so that we understand what we're looking at.
No, Madam Chair, and that's fine. I just didn't know.
We do. This bill does touch also on prostitution, the prostitution-free zones. So, thank you. All right. Thank you. I have here Mr. Sherman Wilburn and a Mr. Brian Finstad. Is there someone out? Mr. Wilburn?
Yes. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Senators. My name is Sherman Wilburn. I currently live and have lived for the last 6 years in East Phillips area, specifically in one of the major corridors of prostitution and drugs. I've also was once a member of the Bloomington Avenue Citizen Patrol as well. I have witnessed on several occasions in the mornings the plight of prostitutes flagging Johns, getting in and out of John's cars, drug dealers and addicts doing business standing amongst the children. This is something that's continued over and over again. We do the best we can to stand for it and stand with our children. Unfortunately, what we're needing is the help of our city and our great state. Just this morning, an example, I was standing with 11 children and I had a couple of cars come up and ask me, was I holding? And this is in front of the children. They show no concern or care or respect for the fact that there are kids standing there. We've also had young girls, the ages 13 and or so, being propositioned on several occasions. Our signage that we're asking for saying clearly, no drugs, no prostitution, no crime, no violence, would be a strong asset to us the more signs we have out there so that our police officers can be fully aware of what the laws are and making sure that those individuals face the proper penalties. Thank you.
There's a grant program.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wilburn. Senator Lemur.
Yes. Was it Mr. Williams?
Wilburn.
Wilburn. Mr. Wilburn, is there? Do you find that there's a problem with existing law enforcement enforcement of these crimes in your area?
Due to the shortage of police officers, it makes it awkward and hard, especially in the early hours of the morning when the shifts are being changed. It seems to be a prime time for them. On the streets, they call it something like a wake-up call or something or another. Now, what that means, I have no idea as to, but you can imagine. And there are a great deal of Johns that come out that time of morning on their way to work.
Mr. Wilburn, if one had signs on corners during this critical time, wouldn't it also be a shortage of police officers on the street at that very same time anyway? Would we get an enforcement to stop that behavior in that area?
Mr. Wilburn.
Yes, sir. I do believe it would make a great difference. I've bought signs that said any improper activity would be reported to the police. I purchased out of my own pocket and placed up on trees and light poles and things such that, and they were effective to a certain degree. Something stipulating what the actual laws are and what is actually stipulated by the law allows that officer to know for sure. He doesn't have to question or wonder whether he's in this individual is in a zone. He automatically knows. Our area is plighted with facilities that need that warrant and fall under the guidelines of the drug-free zone.
Thank you, Mr. Wilburn. Mr. Finstead.
Hi, thank you. My name is Brian Finstead. I live in the Central neighborhood in South Minneapolis. And I just kind of wanted to share, I'm sort of new at living in an urban environment, and a lot of this stuff just is beyond what I ever dreamt living outside of the city. You hear about it, but when you actually live in the city where I live, it's just really interesting that this stuff is real and it goes on and it happens. I happen to have purchased a house that's on a corner that's a very notorious corner for prostitution, and it's almost as if they have regular shifts. You feel like they have more ownership of the corner sometimes than you do. And it is the times, morning and evening rush hour, when kids are going to and from school. And it is, I think, a lot of the Johns live outside the city and they're coming in to go to work. I wanted to speak also about not forgetting the public transportation systems, just because, for example, with our kid, we don't send him to the school in the neighborhood. There's just too many reasons, too many issues going on. And we both work, but because he's outside of, you know, our geographic area for our school, he takes the bus, the city bus, to school. So, I mean, there are kids riding the public transportation systems to and from school. And I think you would find that probably even more so in the inner city, you know, finding kids taking public transportation to try to get to an outer school. And my kid has told me before that, you know, sometimes the prostitutes will talk to him, you know, between, you know, the bus stop and the house, you know, just in kind of a razzing kind of way. They're kind of very, I don't know how, they have so much ownership over the streets and the corner. They kind of heckle you when you go by and stuff. And it's really intimidating to him, you know. And actually now he's sort of gotten desensitized to that. And I think I like that even less, you know. So that's been my experience.
Thank you, Mr. Finstead. Any questions for the witnesses? Further questions? Well, thank you very much for making the time to come in, and we're sorry that we kept you waiting for so long, and it's good that we could have your testimony on the record. Well, you're welcome to come back next Thursday. It'll be the first item on the agenda. When Senator Berglund's here, we'll do a thorough discussion of the bill. But thank you very much.
Thank you.
Members, we could just to save a little bit of time. I want Senator Backus. I want Mr. Backus to walk us through the mechanics of the bill, just so that we know what's in here, and then we'll
You can ask questions so that we have a clear understanding of what this bill is. We'll be somewhat limited for time because we have a number of bills on our agenda, and so I think the more we can use the time today to create a little bit of understanding of the mechanics of this bill, it will help us on Thursday. So, Mr. Backus, can you just briefly walk us through the bill?
Madam Chair and members, under current law, both for controlled substance crimes and for prostitution crimes, we have enhancements to those crimes if you commit the crime in certain areas. For the controlled substance crimes, the enhancements apply to offenses in park zones, school zones, public housing zones, or drug treatment facilities. For prostitution offenses, the enhancements apply to park zones and school zones. What the bill does is it adds three new zones to those laws. If you look on sections 1 to 3, those are the zones, child care center zones, crisis nursery zones, and then public transit stop zones. And then sections 4, 5, 6, and 7 amend then the applicable controlled substance laws to provide the heightened penalty, again, consistent with those other zones. Section 8 essentially does the same thing for the prostitution crimes. And then Section 9 is a grant to the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul for the enforcement-type issues the witnesses talked about. So it would provide grants for signage, increased law enforcement in designated areas, and then collecting data regarding arrests and convictions, and then reporting back to the legislature.
So, members, I think that the policy discussion for us here is, or the policy consideration is, it's not that there aren't zones already established in precedent, but at some point, where do we stop? And from a kid's perspective, a child care center zone or crisis nursery zone, or for that matter, a public transit zone seems to make sense. But you add that to all the ones on the list, and then, how many other else? And specifically, I think you should think about when they define each of the zones, it is an area within 300 feet of the stop or one city block, whichever distance is the greater. So I suppose that within kind of one neighborhood, if you've got a number of these zones listed, if you just draw a 300-foot radius around all these different zones, at some point the whole neighborhood is probably under a zone or multiple zones, conceivably.
Senator Ms. Backus. I'm sorry, Senator, Madam Chair and members. Another issue we talked about beforehand is there is some inconsistency between the controlled substance zones and the prostitution zones. For example, the prostitution zones do not include either drug treatment facilities or public housing zones. And then the controlled substance zones include school zones, but not including school bus stops, which are included for the prostitution offenses. So there is inconsistency between them. So one other issue perhaps is if you want to make them more uniform.
Senator Lemmer?
Madam Chair, I remember in the late 80s and early 90s we had this discussion about enhanced territory for certain crimes. And now we're expanding it, and they've been expanded off and on over the last decade and a half. And the question that I always think of is, if we keep expanding the zones, pretty soon we'll fill up the entire state of Minnesota, and then we'll have to call it a statute. And that's what we have now. And so we're in the process of going full circle, or we could. And not to say that this bill certainly goes that far, but... And I can certainly sympathize with the testimony today. This type of behavior happens in public areas. And I guess I'm more sympathetic to the homeowner that's on the corner. He has to share his own lot with this type of trade. And I'm kind of, we don't necessarily just put in residential neighborhoods. We recognize all the public kind of facilities that are in a community, and then we expand to, anything that defines an area where kids are. And then but we never really define residential neighborhoods, and that's probably as much, if not as important, as any other public location. And so I'm, then I have to come to the point where I have to ask the question, well, does it hurt if we pass this? And then you have to ask, then how much money is it going to cost? And that could hurt another priority that we may have. I'm kind of in a dilemma of what to do on this particular bill, because it's a rehash of things that we've done in the past. And I don't really know if it changes behavior at all. Right. And that's usually why we change our criminal law, is to exact some type of change in behavior, or maybe assume that those who commit crime analyze our brand new state statutes that we write every year and make behavior changes based on it. I think the jury's still out on that after decades of studying that in criminology. So I'm not sure if even our past laws that we have on enhanced penalties really have changed the behavior or not. Do we have any study on that, or any law enforcement that might be able to give us an indication of whether or not enhanced zone areas like this change behavior?
Oh, that's a good question, Senator Lummer. We'll have to put the question out there and see if we can get some answers for you. I just, I don't mean for us to have a full-blown discussion. I wanted to just put the issues on the table for us to think about. And in fairness to Senator Berglund, we ought to have that discussion when she's here so that she can give us some input, too. But those are the issues that with counsel I've identified for you to think about. Any other? Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, I'm just curious on page 2, line 5, references a statute, section 174.22, subdivision 7, that defines apparently what is considered a public transit services. I'm just interested to know, for example, downtown Minneapolis or downtown St. Paul, there's a bus stop on every block, sort of as you pointed out. So does that make the whole downtown area a zone that would fall within the statute, or is it more narrowly defined? So I guess that would be a question I'd have for next time. Maybe we could look at how much of the geography of the city would actually fall within the drug-free zone. And my concern would just be, if you dilute it too much, does it lose its effectiveness?
Madam Chair,
maybe Senator Neville.
I could also ask a question of Senate Counsel. Did you have a chance to review any of the case law on these before today? In the back of my mind, I know there have been some challenges to these zone laws. You know, part of it, one of it was equal protection. I mean, what if you live within a park zone or a school zone and you're treated unequally just because you do a drug deal inside your house versus somebody else who does it inside their house, but they don't live within 300 feet of a school? Or sometimes there's vagueness, because I don't know that we ever clarified whether the 300 feet starts from the edge of the property or the building. I know that there have been some challenges, but I can't remember. I mean, obviously the Supreme Court didn't strike the laws. They're still on the books. But I'd be interested in knowing what those issues were, maybe for the next hearing.
Ms. Abacus, do you have the answer, or should we wait?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Neville, I did look kind of briefly in the annotated statutes, and I think you're right that there are more cases than what I found, and maybe I'll try to look further, but I did find one case construing park zone, and it was a rural area where there really wasn't a city grid system, and they said, well, in that case,
yes.
The one block wouldn't really apply. It would be ambiguous. It would be the 300 feet.
You know, I think that was a case in my district. Wasn't that a Faribault case? I think that was a Faribault.
You litigated that case.
No, now that I think about it, it's because it was this humongous block.
Yeah.
And it was not your typical city block, but it was a block. And so somebody argued, I wasn't within 300 feet of a school, but they were within 300 feet of the corner of that block.
Mm.
So I don't know if that was the Faribault case or not, but I think I recall that.
Well, and that's something, members, that's something for us to consider because it is optional. It's, you know, within 300 feet of the stop or the center or the building or one city block, whichever distance is the greater. So, a block could go for a really long time. Any other questions of clarification on the mechanics of the bill? Very good. Well, Senator Schott.
Madam Chair, just are you intending then, based on Senator Limmer's, your response to Senator Limmer about having maybe getting a police kind of perspective on this, I worry about the dilution of, you know, the
Senator
impact here by having too much, but I also want to know how they would feel about what they currently have and then how they would feel about the expanded.
Senator Scheid, I think what we'll do is I'm going to communicate the 3 points, what have been historically the effectiveness of the enhancements for deterrence, what about the downtown areas and dilution, and then we'll have Mr. Bax look more at case law. And I'll communicate these 3 points to Senator Berglund so that she's prepared, and maybe we can try to find somebody to come and answer the questions for us.
Right. Because, Madam Chair, I certainly am sympathetic to the people. I think we all are to the people who's testified here.
I think so, too. So, all right. Thank you very much. Thank you for sticking around, and we do good work. So I appreciate you all sticking around to participate. The committee is adjourned.
Is the tape off yet?